Yeah, welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is Matt Amelian. Matt is a contributor to Pistols Firing, and you can find him on Twitter at Matt Amelian. You can find the podcast on pistolsfiringblog.com, or as always, just go to iTunes and search Pistols Firing. If you want to sponsor the show, you can email me, pistolsfiringblog@gmail.com, and hope you guys enjoy today's podcast. Okay, Matty Million, welcome back to the podcast. It's been a while, but I appreciate, well, I say a while, it's been like 10 days. I appreciate you coming back on.
Yeah, it hasn't been too long, but yeah, win or lose, we're still here to do our pods.
last week was not OSU's best showing of the last few, of the Gundy era, I guess. But I wrote a post today, or I guess we're taping this on a Wednesday, so I wrote a post on Wednesday about what OSU's kind of five biggest issues going forward for the rest of the season are. And the five that I mentioned were Walsh's arm, the running game, the kicker, Ben Grogan, basically, forcing turnovers on defense, and then Mike Yurcich's creativity. Is there anything you would like to add to that? Or is there anything you would take off that? Or how are you looking at that?
Well, I thought it was interesting that none of those five, I think some of them tie into it, but I think everybody knows it's no secret or in-depth thing is the offensive line. And I don't know if you left it off because it was the obvious one that, I mean, everybody's talking about, so there's no reason to kind of hit that. But I will make a note on that is, it's crazy because when's the last time that we've ever had any reason to knock the offensive line or complain about the O-line? And I can't remember it.
So well, to me, that's what I think. And I wrote this and I said that I don't know if OSU's offensive line is bad. It might be. It could be. I don't want to bury them after one game, but I feel like this is kind of an easy team to prepare for. And you're really, as a defense, You're kind of just playing to stop the run, aren't you? Like if you get beat deep by Walsh, I think you can live with that, right?
No, and that kind of goes to my point on your number one is, I think I agree with you on his on the point on his arm more than it seems like most people do, because I mean, let's be honest, the passing game's not as much of a threat. I mean, yeah, he's proven he can make some throws, but he can't make all the throws, and he can't make some of them as well. And I'm not saying you got to beat a Whedon, but probably you should just compare him to Shelf. But I don't think that it's, okay, he has a weak arm, he can't beat you deep, so defenses can focus on stopping the run. I think where we may see it the most effective is that they're able to play a little tighter, and then it's more of the short passes that they can take away. And when you take away that from this offense, to me, that's kind of the biggest problem there.
Not to mention that when you're playing, and I agree with you, that when you're pressing up on wide receivers, that if you do run, there are guys that are there that are more shallow than they would be normally that can stop the run, right? So,
well, yeah, I'd say that, but then again, it's not like Jeremy Smith was getting like 4 yards beyond the line of scrimmage too, where the secondary had to make a play. Cause I mean, I that's a valid point, but I don't know if it's applicable, but really I can't say that was definitely what happened in the game, but it's something that I thought about when reading your number one point there on his arm that I'm going to watch for on Saturday, because I think Snyder's a smart enough coach to figure that out, saying we don't have to give this guy a big cushion. Now, I will say, I mean, that pass he threw to Seals, he's capable of leading a receiver downfield 30 to 40 yards. I mean, he's not going to hit you any deeper than that accurately, but he can do it if you're not careful. And I think that was just a rough game with a couple plays with Seals where he dropped passes, because I think his hands have looked really good leading up to that game.
Well, and my point with Walsh is, you know, and I think I tweeted this after I posted the problems thing today, is I'm not saying he's never going to beat you with his arm, because I think he can. I'm just saying that I don't really see it coming out of him consistently. And maybe it will. Maybe he'll develop that and whatever. And I don't even know if I'm talking about arm strength as much as him just being accurate on stuff. I mean, we've seen – I think that we've seen in every game, except maybe the UTSA game, that he's missed guys that you that kind of make you raise your eyebrows like – how did he miss that guy? You know, guys that are wide open or that are pretty easy passes. So to me, it's more of a concern that he's, as Gundy would say, inaccurate than how far he can throw a football.
Yeah, that's fair. And I've actually got your point one in front of me now. And you mentioned the strength, but it's more of the accuracy when it gets beyond 15 yards. And I know. I think it's a valid point. Now, we talked on our last pod, and I admit it, I'm not crazy. This offense doesn't really do anything for me, and it's not all because of Walsh. It's just I prefer not to have that style of quarterback where his legs are what people make him think that he's a playmaking quarterback. And look, I get that there have been some great quarterbacks who have done that, but he's not a Vince Young. He's not a Tim Tebow. And is he a Taylor Martinez? That doesn't really get me fired up. How great has Nebraska been? It's been pretty good. So I'm still on the same. I keep my same comment as last week. If someone were to come in, if Rudolph were to come in and win the job over him, I sure wouldn't be upset from day one. There may be a lot of people that think he needs to have the ball no matter what. But if we've got a guy that, I mean, I think you make a good point on his accuracy downfield. That's something else I'll probably watch a little closer on Saturday.
Yeah. And, you know, this isn't me trying to, I feel like people think that, you know, I was talking to Kevin DeShazo today and we were talking about how Oklahoma State fans, you know, all of last year and the beginning of this year and fall camp and everything, they're like, we want Walsh. He's our guy. He's our guy. And now, you know, one bad game and it's like, oh, we're out on Walsh. We want Chelf. And you're like, well, hold on here. And it was funny because I went on the Sports Gambling today to talk to Mark and PJ. And by the end of the conversation, I was defending J.W. Walsh as the Oklahoma State quarterback. And I got off the phone, I got off the line, and I just kind of sat there, and I was like, how did we get to a point where I'm like the leading voice in the sports media world defending J.W. Walsh? Because I mean, you know, for the entirety of his career, I've said love him. He's okay. He doesn't have a great arm, whatever. And then all of a sudden, I end up as his number one defender, which is just this. I don't know. It's really bizarre. But my point was that I was talking to, I was hanging out with David Ubbin last night, and we were talking about just kind of the quarterback situation and everything. And he's like, "Man, how big does that Wes Lunt transfer look right now? Because not because of this year, but it's like, what exactly do we think J.W. Walsh is going to become? I mean, this is kind of." Like, I feel like who he is right now is kind of what he's going to be over the next 3 years. And that, as an OSU fan, and you've said this, it doesn't really excite me that much, you know?
That's the main point I've said. It's like, look, it's been, I think you said it just a different way. You're like, that's fine. I mean, yeah, he can improve. But, I mean, all these comments I'm reading, like, he's showing signs of greatness and – gosh, he can get such a, you know, get so much better. I'm like, no, his ceiling's not as high as you think it is. And if we can't use the word great, and that's not like I was accused of being harsh on him because I said he wasn't a great quarterback. I mean, I don't even know if we've had more than one great quarterback come through OSU. So like, I don't like throwing that word around great because he's made some really good plays. Yeah, a lot of players are going to have some really good plays, but I'm not going to expect that's, you know, 2 years down the road, I'm going to get that 75% of the time from them. So I'm with you. I think that he can improve. There's definitely room for improvement, but it's not like I'm expecting – yeah, are we expecting him to be Tebow or Vince Young in 2 years? I think that's – no, I think it's definitely ridiculous to get carried away like that.
Well, I think one of the problems is that as an OSU fan, we've gotten so used to this progression of getting better. And so you start out with Gundy's first year and you go 4-8, and then you go – what was it, 6-6 or whatever, and then you go 8-4, and then you go 9-4, and then you go 10-2, and then you go, you know, 12-1, and so...
You have that rapid attention.
Yeah, exactly. These last 2 years that have been, you know, above average, I guess you could say that. I mean, you go to a bowl, and you win a bowl, and you're the Big 12 favorite. Like, those are above average things that an above average college football program does. But
yeah,
you, I mean, it's at the same time, it's descending a little bit. And so you're like, well, what's the deal? And you have to understand that you're not Alabama and you could be, I mean, there's potential, but there's only one Alabama and there's only, you know, like not everybody does that. And so
I mean, look at Texas. Yeah. And USC, I mean, those are the other two schools. Florida, they're still good, but they're not like at the top. So
right.
All these schools have their years and go through these time periods where you're not winning 10 games, you know, yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah. What's the scenario that has to happen for us to see Clint Shelf as a starting quarterback at Oklahoma State this year?
I don't know. I don't really know if I have a comment on that either. I agree with you. It was really frustrating on Twitter. I mean, we saw it from Gottlieb, Desmond Mason, like calling for Shelf after the end of the first half. And you're thinking like, no, you can't just make a switch. You know, like Gundy's going with Walsh, and you have, and it's not like Walsh was losing that game for us, in my opinion. Like, if it was all on him, if he had three picks in the first half, just ridiculous, maybe, but it wasn't, obviously, it wasn't all him. And I feel we texted about it. You've really, let's see what he's made of. Let's get through this tough and see if he can make something of it. And even if he, you know, we didn't, we lost. I mean, you still can't bail on him because now what if you bring in Shelf against Kansas State and he has a terrible game? Well, can you go back to Walsh? I mean, or do you have to stick with Shelf? I mean, I think you've made your call on your quarterback and you've got to ride him for at least several games.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about this today and you know, I think the word he used was it's a disaster if you go back to Shelf. Not because Shelf is bad. I think Shelf is... You know, I wanted it to be Chelf all along, but if you're Gundy, it's like,
oh crap, I was wrong. Let's panic. I mean,
well, yeah. If you're Gundy and you say we're gonna go back to Chelf, it's like, what are you doing? You know, like what is the goal here? And not to mention, I mean, how many? Okay, at his ceiling, how many games better is Chelf than Walsh for an overall season? Maybe one at the most two.
Oh, you're talking about how many more wins Chelf would get us in Walsh? I'm not even sure the answer was zero.
Well, I'm saying at the best case scenario.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if both quarterbacks were playing well, I guess I'll just say that if Chelf was playing well and Chelf was playing well and Walsh was, you know, just average, kind of like a West Virginia. I mean, yeah, a couple. At times I kind of thought that maybe we thought Chelf was better than he really was because of certain games last year. But I mean, Walsh is capable of being, I mean, if we lined up against West Virginia tomorrow and Walsh was the starter, I highly doubt we'd be losing by 9 points again. Don't know. I don't think that you can start Chelf, I mean, before the Iowa State game, which is 3 games from now.
Yeah, I think if you go out against – it will be interesting if they go out against Kansas State and – I mean, if OSU loses by 20 at home to Kansas State – I'm not saying that's going to happen, but what if Walsh goes out, throws three picks, they lose by 20 at home, then we can talk about it and, I mean, that'll be a thing. But
it, yeah, that's and of course what I'm thinking of. You can't start Chell for the next, you know, next two games. Well, that's also not based on the fact that I don't think we're gonna. I'm not saying we won't lose, but we're not gonna get blown out by either of these teams. And I think you also, even if you lose, I think you got to look at the overall problem. And I mean, would Chell have done any better against West Virginia? Everybody was jumping on the quarterback decision like that, and I was just thinking. I mean, Walsh had there were times he had the ball and, like, I mean, he couldn't even get like a one Mississippi and he was already scrambling. So, I mean, I'm not convinced Chelsea would have won that game for us. I mean, people might say, well, at least we would have known, at least he would have had a shot. And like, well, then you've yanked, then you've gone with a guy, gone with your number, the next quarterback, and then you're already back on the first guy you chose and you're four games into the season. So,
yeah, like my dad said, that's a disaster. I do still go back to what one, I don't know if I've said his name, so I'm not going to say it on here, but what one national writer told me in talking to another Big 12 coach, who said at the beginning, like in fall camp, that this Big 12 coach couldn't even believe that it was a race, that he thought it was just going to be Chelsea, no, you know, for sure. And so, you know, it's kind of like, it's just weird. Like, the whole thing, it's almost like nobody expected Walsh to be inaccurate. And you're like, did you watch OSU play last year? Because, yeah, he didn't throw a lot of picks or whatever, but he was, I mean, he gave you a heart attack as he was doing it.
Yeah,
and so, like, I guess, and I wrote this, but I was really surprised at how surprised people were at what Walsh did. And I don't think Saturday is, you know, I don't think that is his.
That's not him. I mean,
no.
We're not going to see that every week. We may not see it again. I mean, I fully expect him to bounce back and have a really, really good game again. I love his line. Like, we can't let West Virginia beat us twice. I think he gets it. I mean, look, yeah, we know he's a competitor and he's a gamer. And it says that, I mean, and that's good. So I think his attitude's in the right spot, and I think he's got the talent enough to come back and handle a team like Kansas State. Now, I don't think we're going to see maybe against TCU going back on the road a couple games after that. I mean, it may be a while before Walsh struggles again, because I think West Virginia's defense actually is better than we had given it credit for, and I don't know if we'll see another defense that's pretty good for a while, but I'm still on the Walsh train. Not as like I'm all about him, but I think you have to stick with him. And it's frustrating to see all those people who were Walsh supporters all of a sudden like calling for Chell. I'm like, you guys sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like
the Walsh train. Yeah, and this is the last thing I'll say about this, but one thing that, and I want to write about this at some point, it feels like more than just one post, but one thing I hate about Twitter and Facebook and even the comments section on Pistols Firing is that it's almost like people only want to comment if something is the best thing ever or the worst thing ever, and so people get made into things that they're not, and yeah, in some cases it might be true. Like Brandon Weeden is the best quarterback to ever play at Oklahoma State. That is a right thing to say on Twitter. Like that, I am fine with you saying that. But I don't know. It is more fun to say, oh, you know, Walsh could win the Heisman. Like that's fun. But it's not rational and it's not correct. And so I feel like things are exacerbated by social media and by the thing. I mean, we're only consuming all of these things via social media. And so you just kind of get, I just feel like your viewpoint gets distorted because of what goes on there.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about with the whole, he's shown signs of greatness. I'm like, no, that's not a sign of greatness. Making a great play is not a sign of how somebody can be great. It means that they had a great moment, you know, one play or two plays, and that's not who they are. Just like their worst is not who they are as well. I mean, it's like, come on, like you can't just pick his best or his worst and then make that who he is as a player. Like you just can't. Walsh is a good quarterback. He's a good player, but he's not, in my opinion, he's not anything more than that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is projecting, you know, these individual events. And I really felt like we saw this a lot during the NBA playoffs with different things. Like with the Heat, you saw – I mean, LeBron would make a really good play in the second quarter of a game against the Pacers. And people would, like, project his entire career for the rest of his life based on that one play. And you're just like, my gosh, like – this wears me out. Like, I don't even want to read this because it's so tiring. And it's just, you know, that's the world that we've created that we live in. And it's great, but it just, I just think people have to be careful about it. I did want to talk to you about the Big 12 because it's no different from last week. It's still not good, but I think it's interesting. And I want to know what your thought is on what Oklahoma State's ceiling is for the rest of the year. I mean, is this a team that, I mean, to me, it's just, it doesn't seem, and I've said this all year, but it doesn't seem like, excuse me, a Big 12 title team. What's their ceiling after the West Virginia loss?
You know, it's funny because, like, as much as we talked about it before the season, we were trying to talk people, like, down. Like, you know, because people – We talked about this. They jump. They want to be like, oh, we're going 12-0, and now we had a bad loss, and they want to say, oh, we're going 7-5. That's where we are. I mean, their ceiling, and I mean this, and I don't know if you mean like this. Their ceiling is 11-1. I mean, I truly believe what we talked about before, on this whole not going 12-0 thing is you're just going to have a bad game. Like, there's no blame game with that West Virginia loss, in my opinion. It was the team, we just played horrible. Like, the team collectively, like, there was not a whole lot of, there wasn't a whole lot that went really well for us. But I look at the rest of the way and I'm like, you know what? I mean, we can still look at every game, and I'm not saying we will go 11-1, but I can look at every game and say, man, we're in that, you know? I would still probably predict us to lose one or two, but I mean, I don't think that means, oh crap, now we're going to lose at Tech, we're going to lose at Texas, we're losing to Baylor, we're losing to OU. I mean, I think that's kind of ridiculous in the other direction. People love just hopping back and forth from one end to the other. They just can't see it rationally from my perspective. So, yeah, the feeling to me is still 11 wins. Likeliness very low on that, but I don't see 7-5. It's possible, but I definitely don't think that that's likely either.
Yeah, to me the ceiling on this team is 10-2, and I think, I mean, maybe that gets it done in the Big 12. I don't know how good Baylor is. I mean, I think they're really good. I think they're a Big 12 title type team, especially this year. I think OU's better than we thought they were going to be, and that's just them being the Kansas basketball of Big 12 football, but. I feel like this OSU team, and this is another thing I was actually talking about with my dad. I get, for everybody listening, I don't produce any original ideas. I get all of them from my dad, Maddie, Nolan, Quaid, OKC Dave. OKC Dave actually writes the whole blog under the pseudonym of Pistols Guy, but.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No, but I was talking to my dad, and this is just, you know, this is a team that is built in such a way that they're not going to be a, I mean, obviously, this is not based on the West Virginia game, but based on what we've seen all year, they're not a juggernaut offensively. And so you have to look and say, hey, there's going to be games where they're a little bit off offensively. Can you overcome those things? And yeah. I don't know that great teams can. I don't know that the answer is yes for this team. Just little stuff, making field goals, not having turnovers. I mean, just stuff that when you're not on offensively that can sneak a, you know, sneak you a win when you shouldn't get it. So I just, you know, I think that because of that, they're going to lose – at least one more and probably a couple. I think they'll go 9-3. You know, they could go to, you know, Alamo, Cotton Bowl, something like that. But yeah, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's, you know. It's
really not. This team's not either. We're just not as, at this point, and we, like I said, I'm not basing on West Virginia either because we're a lot better than that team that showed up Saturday. But yeah, we're still, I'm with you. I'm like, I see us 8-4, 9-3. You know, maybe you take Tech, Baylor, Texas, and OU, but even Texas, you're kind of like, I still think that that's a win. You got Tech, Baylor, and OU. You could very, very well lose all three of those, and you could very well win two out of those three. So, because those teams are, I mean, they're very well, they're capable of doing just what we did in Morgantown. They're very capable of going on the road and just falling flat. So, I don't think just completely bailing on this team. I definitely don't think the whole "we effing suck" comments were justified in any way. I think that's a pretty lame and lazy breakdown. I think they played that way, but that's definitely not how I would describe this team. But yeah, I still think the ceiling, if you're going to say as good as we can do, you know, I think that there's a small chance that they look at this game and it sticks with them, and they don't really have, they kind of bring a different mindset every other game. I'm not saying it's the Tim Tebow Ole Miss situation, but maybe a poor man or a homeless man's Florida Ole Miss type deal. We're not winning the title. I'm just saying from the mindset going forward standpoint, yeah, I shouldn't have brought that up.
No, it could be a homeless man's version. I mean, I'm sure Walsh, you know, he's a stand-up guy. He said some probably very inspiring things in the locker room after the West Virginia loss. Okay, real quick, one last question, and then we'll talk about Breaking Bad a little bit.
Yeah, that's really important.
For sure. Mike Yurcich is, you know, he's – whatever. I don't know what he is. He's Oklahoma State's offensive coordinator. How much? I don't even know what my question is. How much of Oklahoma State's offense do you put on his shoulders? Like how much of the blame for whatever happens or doesn't happen in a game do you put on him?
That's a tough question because, I mean, I obviously a lot of it, you know, part of me should say it's all of it because he's the offensive coordinator. But I mean, he may call some right plays and they may not be executed well on the field. I mean, if indeed we have some major offensive line problems, and remember that we lost Devin Davis at left tackle, I believe, and I sometimes have a hard time remembering exactly what position guys are on the O line. But you know, like, Wickline's not one to, okay, who's the next left tackle in line? He's like, who's the next best offensive lineman? Let's bring him in, and then we'll shuffle guys around. So that's not how this was planned out before the season to this line to be. And so, yeah, I think that there may be some growing pains. And but if the O-line really is an issue, it's very difficult for Yurcich to come up with a game plan for an effective offense when your O-line is playing very poorly. I mean, you can come up with some theories on what you can do, but that's a lot different than actually making that happen as the offensive coordinator. But I'd probably put 75%. OKC Dave made a good point in the comment section the other day. I mean, we can talk about that one play all day long, that fade. But the fact that it was even – there was a fade built in just – That's a problem in itself, which led me to also start thinking, I'm like, wow, our best option for the fade is Tracy Moore. Like, how far away? I mean, you saw that line that was Dez this weekend. I'm like, man, from Dez to Tracy Moore. that just made me depressed. But I don't know. To answer your question, I guess maybe like 60 to 75%. Because I don't know.
Well,
I could change my game, really.
Yeah, and I was – apparently somebody – I didn't hear this, but somebody told me on Twitter that Traber was kind of ripping on me today on the Sports Animal for not putting more blame on Yurcich and kind of giving him a free pass. And my whole point with the offensive coordinator is a lot of I actually don't know how much of this is still true, but a lot of the original offense that Holgorsen implemented at Oklahoma State was run pass options. And so you're you know, whenever, let's say, Walsh hands off to Jeremy Smith for negative 2 yards, yeah, that's a bad play, but it's not like Yursich just picked this one play out of 2,000 and you say, man, that was a really stupid choice. Like, I think a lot of it is based on what the defense does and how they line up and all that stuff. So I hesitate to put, you know, as much blame on Yursich. I just feel like the typical fan thing to do is be like, oh,
play calling.
The offensive coordinator. I get it. You know, whatever. And, yeah. And so
I mean, I get it a little bit on Twitter on Saturday, honestly.
Yeah, I want to be fair to the situation. And like I said, I don't know how much of their playbook is still run pass options. I assume it's a lot because they're still running the same offense. But it's just, it's so different with, I just felt like that was, Whedon was so good at figuring out, you know, when to run, when to pass, what to do, who was covering who and all that stuff. And it's a tough thing to learn, and Walsh is still learning it. And I don't know. I don't want to bury a guy 4 games into his coaching career. So yeah, I don't know. I think he'll be fine. I think the one thing that he has to do is figure out if teams key in on the run game, which it seems like they'll probably do, and they should do, is can I get guys in space and can my quarterback hit them? You know, I even last year when Walsh was playing quarterback, we can talk about how bad his arm is or whatever, but Monken kept the offense running, and he did things that, and I don't, again, this is all offensive theory and way over my head, but he did things that kept the offense moving and scoring points, even with Walsh out there. So I feel like Yursich should be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, and I kind of want to see if he puts Walsh in the situation where, you know, I mean, our receivers are running routes where he can get rid of the ball a lot quicker because, I mean, man, he did not have, and they weren't, I mean, they were blitzing on third down a lot, but I mean, just in general, like, help him get rid of it a little quicker. We got great, I mean, shoot, he loves Stewart, so, I don't know. I don't know if I could rip Yursich at this point. I did a little bit during the game. I mean, at what point do you have to say, okay, look, less than a yard per carry, I mean, it's just not working for Jeremy Smith. We've criticized how he was, you know, especially on the pod last week, using Smith outside the tackles. But I was actually having a hard time determining whether or not the play was for him to go outside the tackle or as if he just didn't have a choice. Like, but then again, I look at Desmond Rowland, and to go back on your number 2 point on the post today, I think it's actually time for them to say, you know what, the loyalty card to Jeremy Smith is out, you know, and he's had 4 games to really prove himself as the feature back. And I don't think he's done it. I think we all feel like Roland's shown more signs that he can be the lead back. And I think that this point forward, he needs to get the bulk of the carries. I mean, he needs to be the guy that you're every down back or get, you know, and we go back to Jeremy Smith on, you know, third and short goal line when he's fresh. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that I can buy into that. I thought Jeremy Smith played really well against Mississippi State, and again, Mississippi State might be awful. I don't know. I think they're like 2-2 or something.
You know, I remember that game. Like Jeremy Smith only had like 2 or 3 rushes in the first half.
Yeah,
I had some thoughts for Yursich on then. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, well, he had more targets as a receiving targets than he did rushes.
Yeah, he did, but he ended up with like 110 and 2 touchdowns or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I mean, that's 1 game out of 4. I don't remember his stats.
I think, and we'll get to Breaking Bad, but I think that and I've said this 100 times, I said it on the Sports Animal today, if you're going to play Walsh, I'm under the presumption that you're playing Walsh because he's a better runner plus passer than Chelf is a runner plus passer. Run him out of the diamond. Call a play that is Walsh running. Like, that's all it is. Like, it's not a run-pass option. It's not him not trying to die, you know, from a defensive end.
Yeah, yeah.
Let Kai Staley and Jeremy Seaton block and let him run. You know, like, yeah. I don't get – I don't know. I just – I don't understand that. But
Okay. I do agree. Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah. Let's get to what's important.
Let's talk about Breaking Bad. Give me 1 to 10, because you and I, and if you're listening and you are on season one or whatever, just stop listening. Because we're going to talk about how this all ends. But
yeah,
1 to 10 on three things: the final scene, the final episode, and the series as a whole.
Okay, all right. Final scene. I might surprise you a little bit. I'll go with a 7. And I almost went 6. The reason being is I just felt like it was so odd that Walt would, he'd show up, you know, like for his big finale. And there were so many, like there were so many things that could have gone wrong with that scene for him where the whole thing is just screwed. And he didn't leave things to chance like that. So that was a little odd. Like, what if, I mean, they could have easily put it, said, no, park over there. Your whole right here, get out of the car and walk with us. And then his car's left, you know, like 100 yards away. Or what if they had him park on a little bit of an incline where the angle of that gun was a little off? Or what if a guy ducked or was sitting in a chair and wasn't shot? Like, all the guys got shot. Why would they take his key away from him only to put it right down where he can have access to it? I don't know. So those things bother me. But those are like, Carson and I touched on that the other day. Those are like kind of, it's kind of being picky. But overall, you know, I love that, you know, they let Jesse kill, I'll still call him Landry, that they let him choke him out. And you know, the whole do-it-yourself thing was kind of like, dude, I'm not your slave anymore. I'm not doing your work for you. You want to do it yourself. You know, it ended really well.
So what's your grade for the final episode?
Final episode, I'll go a little bit higher on that 8. I still had, and the reason I don't go any higher, kind of the same point as I made on the scene is that I still don't understand how all these things, like, they didn't explain as far as how can he just go into a diner and not be recognized, not be known. It's not like he was being discreet. I mean, I know these are probably things that have been said on a regular basis. If they were watching, like, how, I had a feeling he was in the house, in the apartment with Skylar. Like, I just had a feeling he was in there, the way, like, she was reacting on the phone. How did he get in? How did he get out? They just made it seem like it was very easy. Like, he just walk in and out of back door. Like, they wouldn't be watching that. So, little things like that kind of made me question the episode, and I don't feel like that's, I don't know, I feel like he's more careful than that throughout the whole entire show, but I haven't gotten your grades either yet, because if you want to hear what I liked about him, I was expecting, in a way, you know, I mean, I watched him on Netflix, I had to catch up.
Yeah, I don't know how you're not dead, by the way, because you watched the whole thing in, what, like a month and a half, 2 months, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, which isn't ideal. This is one of those shows that I wish I would have had, like, the whole experience of, like, going through the story, you know? Plus, everybody is kind of like you're watching it with people on Twitter, which is, I think, a cool thing. But, yeah, I was still expecting this, because the episodes leading up to it were just insane and intense, and you're just, like, the jaw drops, like, whoa, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. And so I was kind of like in that same mindset. So I was almost disappointed when it was 50 minutes in and almost nothing had happened. But then I was like, you know what? Like, that's not what I'm, you know, that's not what I'm looking for in an episode. Like, I'm in a finale. Like, I am usually, I hate it when, like, I loved Lost. I watched Lost, but the last episode, they intentionally leave it like, no, interpret it how you want to, you know? When I heard The Sopranos, was the same way. I didn't watch it, and it gave you that closure, and I love the way that they ended all the story points the way they did. So I think that I could even almost go with a 9 actually on the finale, and that's got to be one of the best shows I've ever seen. So beginning to end, they made you love characters, and they turned around and made you hate them. They made you question them, like, do I like this guy, do I not? I think I would go 10 on the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm almost exactly the same numbers. I'm with you. I was a 6 or a 7 on the final scene, probably 7. I mean, it's hard to do a final scene just because I feel like it's hard to make it plausible, but also still satisfy people, you know? Like, I just feel like that's a difficult thing to do. I thought the episode was actually really good, and Alan Sepinwall of HitFix.com made a real good point that the last two episodes, so Granite State and Felina, or however you say it, were an epilogue to, I mean, the story really ended the episode that Hank died, and these last two were just kind of like the epilogue, like, okay, this is, you know, we're looking back and saying this is what happened after the real story ended, which I thought was it was a cool way to look at it. And it really, cause things did slow down in the last two episodes. So it really made sense to look at it like that. The final episode, I would give an 8 or a 9. I'll say an 8 to be different from you. And then obviously
I said 8.
You said 8? Okay, I'll give it a 9 then. And then the series as a whole is obviously a 10. I did think it was interesting. I felt like by the end of the series, you had all these TV writers and different people that you follow on Twitter, that it was almost like no matter what they did, people were going to think that it was the most amazing thing ever. And And a lot of times it was, like, I'm not saying that it wasn't, but I just feel like you get this momentum thing going, and people who follow other people that they like on Twitter or whatever, or even other TV, right? Like whenever I write something, I don't want to, you know, I don't always want to like write something way different than everybody. Like, that feels weird. It feels vulnerable or whatever. And so I just feel like people just kind of get in the flow, and this was an easy show to do it on because like 90% of it was amazing, but there was that 10% that everybody was like, yeah, it was awesome. And it really wasn't. And I think we'll look back on it and be like, maybe shouldn't have gone all in on the 100%, but that doesn't change the fact that it was an incredible show.
Yeah. It was funny because you say that, and right when it was over, I mean, Lindsay was kind of watching it with me. She didn't watch any really of the show, but she watched some of the later episodes just because she wanted to see how it ended for whatever reason. But I was kind of like, you know, at first I thought, I'm a little disappointed just because I wasn't like all in amazing. And then I was on Twitter and all I saw was perfection, perfection, perfection. And I was like, I looked at it and I was like, well, you know, from a whole story standpoint, yeah, it was, but from like the way the episode played out, I was kind of like, well, what if this happened? What if that, and I wasn't doing that throughout the show, you know?
You get talked into it, and that's actually something that I don't know if you struggle with this, but I struggle with it on just when I'm writing posts or writing even like 10 thoughts after games and stuff. Like I want my ideas. I know we joke about this, but I do want my ideas to be original, and I'm easily influenced by what other people who I value or like I value their opinion. I'm easily influenced by what they say. Like if OKC Dave says something about a thing, then I'm like, automatically I say, oh yeah. And then I have to step back and think about it and say, is that what I really think? Is that reality? Is that the truth? And so it's tough. Like, I don't think that's something that's unique to anybody really. I think everybody struggles with that.
No, I think that's fair. And I think it's not always a bad thing. I think you need to have an open mind and be able to switch. But yeah, it's kind of like, wait, I got to make sure I have my own original thoughts on how I feel about this. Because you basically described how I was thinking on the final episode. I was going back and forth, and then I settled on, I liked it. I thought the key thing there out of the whole finale is that you want to see the ending of the relationship between Walt and Jesse, and you got that. Like, that, I thought that was done really well. And then also when Walt tells Skylar, I did it for me. Like,
oh, that was, enjoyed it. That was spectacular. Yeah, that was the series for me because, you know, he basically.
You see her face, like, whenever he told her, she was just like, finally, like, he told me the truth. Like, he's not lying to me for the first time in ever.
Well, and I think his next line was, it made me feel alive. And it was like, man, that was this show, you know, like that was the thing. And so,
like, you could tell that it took him over. And so he finally said it. So it was good. Like, they did some good things as far as like closure with him and particular, characters in the show. So let me ask you this. And I know we've probably gone, we always go longer than we plan. Your top three characters, and they can be in order or no particular order.
My top three, and I would need some time to think about this, but I'll give you Jesse is my number one. I just thought Aaron Paul was obviously spectacular, but his character just, I don't know, it changed so much, and I think ultimately it really changed for the better, and I don't know, it was really cool to see him kind of evolve throughout the show.
Oh, no doubt.
So he's number one. I think Gus has to be number two for me.
You're taking my top three.
Just because of how, I mean, he was just so, so good and so precise and so like, I almost feel like that could happen or that, you know, that could, I don't know. He was just incredible.
Isn't it like anytime, I know a writer's good, like when they can make you really, really like one of the worst guys.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, they started off with Gus kind of like, he's in a position that you would think he's a terrible guy, but he wasn't really, you know, all of a sudden, dude, he has those cartel guys taken out, the box cutter scene. You're just kind of like, all right, he's legit. He's a bad dude. But you know, I love the way he like just approached every situation. Like just, you know, hands down to his side, like looking people straight in the eye, very calm, you know, like I don't believe fear is a proper way of motivating somebody. Same top two for me, but go on with your third. I'm not even sure I know my third.
My number three is Walt. Just because, I mean, obviously in the end, I'm like, I don't know. I don't really care about him anymore. And I don't, you know, I don't want him to be successful or whatever. But I just feel like they asked Cranston, and somebody wrote about this or I said it or something, but they asked Cranston to do so much over the course of 62 episodes.
Yeah.
And he just kept delivering. And you're just like, this dude is unreal at what he does. And it was just fascinating to watch that evolution. And you probably experienced that even more than I did watching it over the course of 8 weeks rather than, you know, 5 years or whatever.
It's like he was bipolar because his changes happened so fast to me. Like, they happened in the same day sometimes because he was like, a humble, very timid, shy chemistry teacher. And, a month later, he's getting a little more aggressive and a little more greedy in it for the money. And then, like, a month later, he's just freaking ruthless.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, I honestly didn't have a top three when I asked you that. I actually, when I'm thinking about it, really, I think I like Tank too. Looking back just over the series of the show, because he was this, you know, arrogant, like cocky, annoying guy at the beginning. And then, you know, after his accident, after he was shot, you know, you're kind of like, man, what a prick the way he's treating Marie, you know? And then all of a sudden, like at the end, I'm rooting for him. Like I'm pulling for the guy. Like, one of my biggest anticipations throughout the show was, okay, surely Hank's eventually going to find out. Like, what is he going to do? Is he going to, oh man, this is family. I've got to let him off the hook. How is this going to happen? But he was just, I loved how he was just like, he just closes that garage door and just hits him in the face. Like, I loved how he was like, I'm going to take you out. Like, I'm going to take you down. So I think for him, he did. I mean, he did figure it out, like what he wanted all along. He found his guy, and he just got to read him his rights. But at the end of the day, that's as far as it went. So he put him in cuffs, he got his guy, and then it ended. But, yeah, I think I like Hank a lot more than I thought I was going to during the show.
Yeah, I agree. I think Hank is probably my – I almost said him for number three, actually, but I think he's my number four. And I mean, he was – yeah, I felt like his character was very true to form and did everything that you – looking back, we're like, yeah, that's exactly what his character would do. So, yeah. I thought he was good as well. Okay, Maddie, we will wrap it up. We did go over, but that's okay. And, yeah, enjoy the Kansas State game this week.
Sure thing. Are we going to cover 14.5?
Oh, my gosh. That's so high, isn't it?
I said yes. They're not good.
No, I know they're not. I don't. I think yes, too. I think it's like a 3-touchdown win at the least.
All right. Sounds good, man. Enjoy it.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See ya.
See ya.